We are in the midst of a retreat, a session. It's the category memorial session. Kategiri Roshi, who is the founder of this temple, died on March 1st, 1990. So this is the 20th anniversary of his death. So I would like to start off this morning with a poem that is in, should be in your programs, those of you who have a program. And I'm going to do something different today, I think, to start off. As many of you know, I think poems ought to be read aloud and ought to be read at least three times. The poem that is in the bulletin is a poem written by Hongzhe, who lived in the 12th century, I think, and it is titled Homage to the Fourth Ancestor. And to sort of dedicate this morning to Katagiri, I would like three people to read the poem aloud. In succession. Susan, would you be willing to read? Be the first one to read the poem?
The true form is magnificency illuminated with gleaming fire. The teaching's voice is total silence amid the ringing moonshine. The moon hangs in the old pine tree, cold in the falling night. The chilled crane in its nest in the clouds has not yet been aroused from its dream.
Arnie, are you up for reading the poem?
No.
Okay. Just checking. Yep.
The true form is magnificently illuminated with gleaming fire. The teaching's voice is total silence amid the ringing of wind chimes. The moon hangs in the old pine tree, cold in the falling night. The chilled crane in its nest in clouds has not yet been aroused from its dreams.
Thanks. One more. Scott, are you up for it?
The true form is magnificently illuminated with gleaming fire. The teaching's voice is total silence in the green moonshine. The moon hangs in the old pine tree, cold in the falling night. The chilled crane in its nest in the clouds has not yet been aroused from its dream.
Thank you all. That's homage to the fourth ancestor and homage to Jikai Dainin Katagiri. I never knew Katagiri. I started coming to the Zen Center, I think, in 1992. Cindy, did we do Jikai together? And Ted, do we remember what year that was?
95.
Yeah, okay. So I probably started coming about 92. So Katagiri had been dead for a couple of years. He was born in 1928, January 1st, 1928, and as I said, he died March 1st, 1990. He was ordained and studied under Eko Hashimoto at Eheiji for 3 years. Eheiji is the grand monastery of Soto Zen, the Soto Zen school, and I should have studied up a little bit more, but Rosemary and I had this conversation once before. He was ordained by Eko Hashimoto, and we recite every Saturday. We recite the lineage of our school, both men and women. And here, the Japanese is Kai Gai Daicho, great teacher Kai Gai Daicho, and. I'm assuming it's the same guy. We kind of figured it out, but I didn't look back at my notes. After studying at Eheiji for 3 years, practicing at Eheiji for 3 years, and being ordained, he then went to Komazawa University in Tokyo, and he studied Buddhism for 4 years. It's a little biography here. In 1960, he married Tomoe, who teaches here in the Twin Cities, teaches sewing. And I don't know whether he was in college. Does anybody know this history? When he married Tomoe? Was it when he was in college or after college? Anybody know that? After? We think after. He moved to Los Angeles in 1963. It was customary for the Soto Zen school to send priests over to work with Zen communities and Zen temples in the United States, largely on the West Coast. And in 1965, he was transferred to San Francisco to help Shunryu Suzuki at the temple in San Francisco, and shortly after that, San Francisco Zen Center opened, and Katagiri assisted Shunryu Suzuki at the San Francisco Zen Center. And the San Francisco Zen Center, for those of you who are new today here, is kind of like the mother church of American Soto Zen, kind of a cathedral. We feel a little bit like country church here. After Suzuki died, and it's interesting to contemplate this kind of thing. I've read a biography or two of Suzuki, so I kind of know a little bit of the what was going on, what his ambitions were, what his motivations were. In Katagiri, I've not read a history and don't know these things, but he moved to Monterey and started a sangha in his own home in 1972. And then shortly after that, he was invited to come here to Minnesota by a group of practitioners. And eventually this building was bought, and he founded this temple, Gansho-ji Temple, or Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. And somewhat after that, opened up or founded Hokyo-ji in southeastern Minnesota, which is a Zen country temple. If we're a country church, Hokyo-ji is a country church with church mice. The this is something that I guess I knew, but hadn't remembered. In 1984, Katagiri was invited back, or maybe transferred, I don't know how it works in the Soto school, to San Francisco, because they had Suzuki's successor ran into some problems around boundary violations and was dismissed. And so Katagiri went back to San Francisco to serve as an interim for a short period of time. He ordained 12 Dharma heirs. Dharma transmission in our school is where an individual receives, traditionally it's considered mind-to-mind transmission. What it means is the individuals who receive Dharma transmission are authorized to practice or teach independently without supervision. So towards the end of his life, in one fell swoop, Katagiri ordained or transmitted to 12 individuals. We did a little research or talked a little bit, and as far as we can tell, right now there are 22 Dharma heirs of Katagiri Roshi. These are transmitted individuals, people teaching or able to teach independently. He came to the Midwest. He accepted the invitation because he was aware that Zen was, if not prospering, was rooted on both coasts. But there was this vast middle of the Americas that didn't have a Zen tradition, didn't have a strongly rooted Zen tradition. And so he came to Minnesota to plant those seeds. And now, 20 years later, there are 22 Dharma heirs, most of whom are in the Midwest. Not all of them are in the Midwest. And any number of priests who have not received Dharma transmission but are priests in training. So he was successful, I think, in that. There are Dharma centers dotted all over the Midwest. Due to his effort, his planting the seeds and nurturing the Dharma. We recited a poem. It was to the homage to the fourth ancestor. So, in the Zen tradition, there's kind of the six ancestors. What do we call them? Do we call them? Do we call them six ancestors? Patriarchs. There we go. The six patriarchs. They kind of sit at the top of the pyramid, and it's kind of like a single line down through six, and then the sixth one kind of things began to branch out. It starts with Bodhidharma, who supposedly brought. Well, he didn't bring Buddhism to China, but he started a new school. Came from India, the stories go. What is interesting to me as I was preparing for the talk today is the fourth ancestor to whom Hongzhi wrote that poem. At this point, Katagiri's lineage is three long. It's almost as long as we're almost down to that fourth ancestor after Bodhidharma. Now, I'm not making any claims that we've got these are Katagiri and Karen Suna and Tim. Are like patriarchs, but it's kind of interesting to think about planting the seeds of Buddhism, or planting the seeds of Zen in different places, and the time that goes by. It's been a long time, 20 years. He was here since 1972, so that's a big stretch of time, and there have been successive generations of Dharma heirs. One last thing before I start my talk. Is that in this temple, this center, when Katagiri died, there was a period where there was it was kind of a collective keeping the place alive. And then Shohaku Okamura was the second head teacher here, the second abbot. He was here for 3 years. He's not of Katagiri's lineage, nor of Suzuki's lineage. And Suzuki and Katagiri are not of the same lineage, sometimes that. I remember when I was, it goes back to Jukai, in 1994-95. I can remember, so we had, Okamura was here, and it was a very difficult time here. But there was kind of this backlog of folks who wanted Jukai or wanted to be initiated and do one of these, sew one of these little rakusus and take the precepts. So it's kind of entering, kind of making the step into Buddhist path. So there's a big backlog. I think there were 30, 40 people who were, 42 people in 1994-95. I remember we were herded. It was the day of. It was the day of the event. And it was so big that we had to do it over at the Unitarian Church on 34th and DuPont, whatever it is. And we were being herded around this building, you know, 42 people kind of in preparation. And I remember because Shohaku really didn't know necessarily a lot of these people. He'd been here for a relatively short period of time. He was a very, he had a lot going on. There's a lot of people. So he actually didn't know these individuals, all of these individuals, very well. And so I remember Joanne Snyder, who was one of Katagiri's Dharma heirs, was helping get this thing together. And she said, when you do Jukai, and I will get to my talk on that. When you go through a Jukai ceremony, you get a name. It's called a way name. Is that what it's called? What is it called? Dharma name. Dharma name. I know these things in the back of my head. And so Shohaku gave everybody a Dharma name, and he get it written on the back of your practice. So when he writes on the back of your practice. And Joanne, kind of, as we were preparing, and you don't know that until the day of. And so Joanne was kind of prepping this group of 42 people, and she said, "So now you'll get your Dharma name, and I know, and you know, sometimes it has a lot of significance, and the teacher gives it to you based on your personality and who you are and what he or she thinks, you know, your path is." Now I know a lot of you don't have that relationship with Shohaku. So what you should do is you should think of your Dharma name as a koan. Mm-hmm. So somebody said, "I really don't care, you know, and I can use it as a. I'm just happy to be going through this ceremony in the lineage." Of Katagiri. And Joanne had to say, "No, Katagiri's over here, and Shohaku's over here, and so, anyways, I don't. Maybe it was on YouTube. For all I know, I don't know where that person ended up or landed. And maybe they're. That was kind of humorous. I thought." So, anyways, we've had three abbots here since Katagiri. So we're on the fourth. We're on our fourth. We've had four abbots, including Katagiri. So today, this retreat is dedicated to Katagiri, the Sesshin is, and later on today, to end the Sesshin, we will be doing a memorial service for him. Does anybody have a watch? I don't think so. I am going to continue the topic or the subject that I was talking about yesterday during the session. The topic is concentration. So I'll do a brief review and then go on to some new material. Concentration is also samadhi. It's the Sanskrit name for it. And it's kind of an important concept in Buddhism. It is it's the last of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is one of the first teachings of the Buddha. So there's right view, right thought, right speech, or beneficial, or upright action, livelihood, effort, meditation, and concentration. Concentration is also, when we talk about meditation in Buddhism, it kind of has three elements, three things that are included in meditation. One is concentration or samadhi. The other is mindfulness. And the third is wisdom or insight. So those three, when we say meditation, we're talking about concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom. Samadhi is sometimes defined as the highest state of concentration. The highest state of experience or unity or non-duality. It's sometimes defined as a one-pointed state of mind or one-pointed concentration. And it's also defined as the state of meditative concentration. Sometimes it's referred to as a trance state. But I think of it as that stillness and calm that is sometimes experienced in meditation. Briefly, I talked about a number of different things yesterday. I will just two quick quotes from Suzuki. And one is, without trying to concentrate our mind on anything, we are ready to concentrate on something. This is from a Not Always So, which is a book that is being read by the people who are in practice period for 8 or 9 weeks right now. And so without trying to concentrate our mind on anything, we are ready to concentrate on something. And the image that Suzuki gives is that of Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva, who is sometimes manifested or depicted as having 1,000 hands to see the cries of the world. The bodhisattva of compassion, 1,000 hands to see and hear the cries of the world. And Suzuki says, if she was concentrating on one hand, she'd miss 999 others. So it's this openness of concentration, as opposed to that's a difficult, as Suzuki describes this concentration. It's difficult and a little bit odd in that it's not concentrating on something specific, but it's this wide open concentration, which. Is shikantaza is, or just sitting. Objectless meditation is equated with true concentration. And that's different than other types of meditation where one concentrates on a mantra, on a visualization, on the breath even, although Suzuki does talk about concentrating on the breath. So this is a this is kind of this wide open objectless meditation which Suzuki equates with samadhi. And that's kind of important because he's always talking about practice realization. If you're sitting zazen, it's realization. It's there's no difference between sitting zazen and nirvana. And then one other quote from him. From ancient times, the main point of practice has been to have a clear, calm mind, whatever you do. From ancient times, the main point of practice has been to have a clear, calm mind, whatever you do. So that's very briefly the high points of my talk yesterday. So concentration, samadhi, and this concept of objectless meditation. I realize I have a lot more than I'm going to have time for. So let me skip over. I was going to do a little bit more from Hongzhe. Hongzhe, whose poem we read this morning, was talked about, wrote about silent illumination, which is really where what bathed Dogen in terms of Zen thinking. And so Dogen is very clearly rooted in Hongzhe and Hongzhe's writings on silent illumination, which is again this objectless meditation, are wonderful. But we aren't going to talk about that because we don't have time. And I do want to talk a little bit about Katagiri's take on concentration or samadhi. This is a quote from Katagiri's book of his talks called Return to Silence. Human beings never stop acting. Whatever you are doing, sitting, sleeping, even standing still, you are always acting. Without action, you do not exist. It is just like a ball that is constantly going here and there, or standing still according to circumstances. When a slope comes, the ball rolls down the hill. It acts, but even though it appears to be moving, the center is always still. We call this stillness samadhi. On the other hand, the center is not still. The center must be dynamic. It works, it acts. We call this dynamic centeredness mindfulness. Remember mindfulness, concentration or samadhi, wisdom? Mindfulness is very closely related to samadhi and wisdom. If we were without mindfulness, we cannot have samadhi. And Zazen is the basic practice that allows us to experience exactly what perfect stillness is. It is very difficult to experience this stillness without Zazen. But you can experience samadhi in your daily life through mindfulness. So here Katagiri is talking about a dynamic stillness in the midst of acting. It's no different than the stillness when you're sitting zazen. And you might think when you're sitting zazen you aren't acting, but you're acting as much sitting zazen as you are walking down the street. And it's the same samadhi, it's the same concentration, the same stillness. the Suzuki book we're reading has a chapter in it called the movie screen. But Suzuki has an image of you've got a movie screen. You're watching a movie. You've got this white blank screen, and then all sorts of colors and noises and images and movement get projected on the screen. And sometimes we think that action, that activity, is our life. When in reality, it's the screen behind, that stillness, that blank sheet, that is our true mind. And all of these projections and concepts and activities are projected on it. And I think that when Katagiri is talking about that still center of the ball, it's the same stillness. That's a different metaphor for the stillness that we have always with us if we can clear away some of the chatter. Another image that's often used for this stillness is the ocean and the depth of the ocean and the calmness of the ocean. Even when there's a storm at the top of the ocean and there are waves, at the bottom of the ocean it is still calm. And the ocean is, the ocean is the ocean. Katagiri here talks about the stillness of the samadhi, that the center must be dynamic. It works. It acts. We call this dynamic centeredness mindfulness. And I think mindfulness is different than that stillness. It's bare awareness of what's arising, of what you're experiencing. And as I said yesterday, in some ways, mindfulness protects the stillness that Kanza describes. Sort of mindfulness as being the sentries around the stillness. So something arises and you're aware of it and you let it go, and it doesn't necessarily then disturb the stillness. And they interact. I mean, that's a very dynamic interaction between mindfulness and stillness. Mindfulness and samadhi or concentration. And you can experience that. And I've been reading Katagiri and reading Suzuki, how they always come back to Zazen as almost as if it's a way to give you a taste or a way to encourage this stillness and mindfulness. So that when you go out the door, you can remember it. It can support your mindfulness and stillness when you're at work, or when you're in the grocery store, or when you're driving your car. That the white screen is always there. The center is always there. And I think, and it's funny because neither of them talk about using Zazen to obtain enlightenment or even to obtain or grasp onto the stillness. They both refer to Zazen as really necessary. It's really necessary to give you the encouragement to go out into the world. Suzuki also talks about Zazen as, he calls it the restroom. I call it the outhouse. But Zazen, just as it's necessary to clear yourself out daily, it's a natural function. You don't live unless you do it. The metaphor there is Zazen is an opportunity to notice the white screen again. Zazen is the opportunity to notice the calm at the bottom of the ocean again. An opportunity to shit, to do what's natural, to clean, to just clear yourself, if just for a minute, just as encouragement. I will finish off by just reading one description of this is Cultivating the Empty Field, which is some of the writings of Hongzhe, from which the homage to the fourth ancestor king. And this is from the introduction by Taigen Layton. And I'll read this and just make a comment on it. Most traditional meditation, both Buddhist and non-Buddhist, involves concentration on specific objects such as visual images, sounds, breathing, concepts, stories, or deities in order to develop heightened states of concentrated awareness called samadhi. Silent illumination, however, involves withdrawal from exclusive focus on a particular sensory or mental object to allow intent apprehension of all phenomenon as a unified totality. This objectless meditation aims at a radical, refined non-dualism that does not grasp at any of the highly subtle distinctions to which our familiar mental workings are prone and which estrange us from our experience. So the practice that Hongzhe encourages and writes pretty, puts Walt Whitman to shame, is what Suzuki was calling true concentration. Without trying to concentrate our mind on anything, we are ready to concentrate on something. So it's that openness, that's the stillness that is just aware. Just aware. And it's kind of important to these guys because it opens up equating it's kind of radical. It opens up the ability to equate meditation and samadhi. They aren't different. It kind of radically gets to the non-duality of self and what you're experiencing. So it's important to these guys because it kind of defines their understanding of the world and meditation and Zazen. It's why it's called the Zazen only school or just sitting school. That said, Suzuki also encouraged concentration on breathing. I was talking with somebody yesterday. I can't remember if he also encouraged concentration or counting breaths. I don't know if he did that or not. But there are many ways to encourage this stillness, to bring the mind to a still point. But the important, and this is kind of the radical school, But the important point is, don't mistake the raft for the other shore. They're all just tools to quiet the mind, to still the mind. Let go of them when you don't need them anymore. And the Soto school, or the traditional Soto school, would say, just forget about the raft. Jump in. I'm gonna stop there. I didn't cover what I thought I would, but that's because we talked quite a bit about Katagiri, which was absolutely appropriate. So, anybody have any questions, or either questions or comments about Katagiri, about what I talked about today? Zazen is not a raft. And the image that comes to my mind is, as we're sitting in this retreat, there are all these little black cushions that look an awful lot like rafts. There's a lot of people floating around. I think in that sense, when I use the term raft there, raft would be an object that helps you still your mind. And zazen, or chikan, or just sitting only, eschews the object and just says, open up, don't focus on any object. So that, in that way, shikantaza doesn't offer you a raft, but it's obviously a practice. It's obviously a form. It's one meditative practice. But it doesn't encourage you to use objects, mental objects. And these guys would say, when you do that, you're just engaging you're engaging your intellectual conceptualizing mind to disengage your conceptualizing discriminative mind. You know, you're making up pictures, you're making up stories, which is what you don't want to be doing. But that said, the human mind is a pretty, sometimes the human mind needs to kind of slowly ramp down, or needs to have a tool to crank itself down. That's the difference.
Just a complicated a little more. can you draw parallels to this to like Vipassana practice?
Well, see, I don't know much about Vipassana. What I know, I shouldn't even comment. I really can't comment. I know very little. What I know is probably wrong.
I just remember, I forget what book, it's been a long time, but Katagiri has a discussion he talks about in one of the lectures. Someone writes about him that Katagiri and meditation aren't separate. And so, and it goes, and I can't remember, there's no exact quote that I can remember, but he talks about If I'm getting there, whatever, then Katagiri and meditation aren't separate entities. And in my mind, the way that I thought about that is that meditation is just a vehicle. And when he gets to the point where it's where in suchness, then Katagiri and meditation become one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, we do talk about, we do talk about, again, another way that this school of Buddhism is thought of as there's no kind of path, step-by-step path, that all it is sitting. So there aren't tools to use. Now we say that, but in reality, you know, we have all sorts of things that we use to encourage ourselves and grow our abilities to still the mind and to be insightful about reality. Yes?
So how many of you could share with us one of your fond memories of Kaiguri?
See, I didn't know it, but
I don't really deal with
there we go.
Well, Kaiguri's hero was Dogen Zenji. He always say Dogen Zenji said, it was Dogen's earliest hero. Kaiguri played with language a lot. His English wasn't good. So, to prepare for a talk, took hours and hours of his time. And he would use words in ways that we would never think of using. So, it was kind of awesome. You know, he would use English words in his talk, and he'd go, wow. And it would just go right in, you know, behind the filter because we weren't used to using words. And he was really funny. Just very, very funny. The picture that some of you have where he's sitting, where you're sitting, and he's kind of going like this, and he's got a big smile. He would do that at talks where, you know, buttons are all over the place. And he liked to make people laugh. So there was usually a little chorus over here. that thought he was funny. Very funny. I suspect that his sons were playing some mischief on him, because I remember when he used the word, he said, it's just like the ship in his talk, and it and we're kind of, ooh, you know, he'd say, he's talking about how things aren't what they seem, something like that. He said, just like when you're squeezing the miso out of the container, it looks just like the shit, you know. And some other, I think he used the word, the F word once too. And I'm sure he did not know what he was saying. But someone went up to him afterwards and said, so I suspect that Yas and Ajo were, we need to wear a little, what do they call this t-shirt, the wife beater. It's sleeveless and some shorts and a funny little like sailor hat. That's what he wore around the neighborhood. That sort of went with the lake. So he would look very elegant in his robe, and his actions were very precise and beautiful, stunning. But then, you know, everyday life, then he was comical.
Does anybody else have any story? There's a few other people here who knew him. As, I remember once talking to somebody in San Francisco who they were really delighted to find out that I was from Minnesota, and started talking about Kaiguri and all that. Didn't know. He said, "Well," what his comment was that, you know, because he knew Kaiguri when Kaiguri was in San Francisco, is that in his books, and his books were printed after or published after he died, and so they're they're edited. But the one comment was, well, you know, compared to his talks, his books are pretty dry, and his sense of humor just isn't there. You know?
He used to love to tell stories. He thought that the perfect metaphor for compassion with the mother and the baby. You know, it's based just mother the beast. That's what he repeated it on. That he felt very moved by babies and mothers.
Anything else?
Yeah. It's interesting that the divine samadhi is concentration. Mm-hmm. Yoga concentration, which is dharana. And I know dharani is used. And dharana leads to jnana. That's where we get zen from that. Mm. And jnana leads to the realization of samadhi, which is the sum of all put together.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Just a comment that the restroom outhouse metaphor is going to stick with me for a while. Whenever I hear a toilet flush, I'm going to think of that. If there's not an ancestor who has illuminated the sound of a toilet flush, I should be.